Adrio Baqueta, wer auch immer, warum auch immer, Sie erfahren und sehen, was geschieht in Darfur. Können Sie uns Ihren Augenzeugenbericht geben?
Ja, als Geschäftsführer für Ärzte ohne Grenzen in Deutschland sollte ich auf Deutsch sprechen, aber es ist immer einfacher für mich auf Englisch, Entschuldigung. Yeah, I think it's important to speak for, MSF is working in many places in Darfur. We also work in Chad, and we work in the Central African Republic. And so throughout the whole region affected, we're present on the ground. It's interesting what Leslie was saying a second ago, because I think it does show a difference between a human rights organization and a humanitarian organization, where from a human rights perspective, you're looking indeed at how a war has been fought, where there's been breaches of law, and trying to find specifically the perpetrators of those breaches. As a humanitarian actor, for a start, we don't have the same competence or the same perspective of analysis. Our analysis is always based on how do we provide assistance to those that are affected by the crisis. And that means negotiating with all parties that are on the ground. I think what's interesting, looking at the whole emergence of the crisis in Darfur, what was marked was the complete lack of reaction at the beginning of the crisis. The war was really underway, well underway in 2003, in early 2003, and at least from the analysis of many, there was very little done or very little attention put on the crisis until in mid-2004, once the comprehensive peace agreement was sorted out. And so for us as a humanitarian organization that were trying to gain access at that time, we could have done with seeing a bit more political pressure that finally came in 2004 to open up access for humanitarian actors. I think a lot has changed over the last few years in terms of what's going on the ground and what we've seen. I think specifically in the last 6 months, there's been a sort of re-energizing of the violence. Paradoxically, with the signing of the Darfur peace agreement, instead of it being a real peace agreement, it became a fault line for a new conflict or a new dimension to the conflict. And for MSF now, where we're working in 17 locations, over Darfur, we see people that are stuck in internally displaced camps, sometimes camps as big as 90,000 people that are in places or superimposed on towns that were previously 3,000 or 4,000 people. We're able to provide assistance in those areas. And if you look in isolation at those areas, you see that the mortality rates have dropped dramatically. Malnutrition rates in some of the camps of Darfur are less than the malnutrition rates you find in South Sudan now. So is that good news? Well, it means that agencies have been able to control these islands within Darfur in terms of dealing with emergency needs. But these people haven't got a home. They're still completely uncertain about their future, and they continue to be attacked in these camps. In 2003-2004, in Mornay, in West Darfur, the MSF facility at the peak was seeing something like 450 surgical interventions, so treating people for trauma, over a three-week period. And now over a six-month period in Mornay, we see 400 surgical interventions for our teams. It's still bad in the camps, but it's relatively under control in terms of providing emergency assistance, but it doesn't take away the human component that people continue to suffer. Outside of the camps, it's extremely difficult to travel. It's almost impossible to travel by road, as humanitarian actors have become targets in the conflict from all sides. The way that Salil presented, and indeed he had to simplify to introduce the development of the conflict, it sounded like there was a number of clear parties. And as Leslie was saying, the number of parties now has multiplied as the peace agreement has failed and as all of these once united groups have splintered. The whole fabric of the society has broken to such a point that now it drifts towards anarchy, where you have Arab against Arab, Black African against Black African, community against community, neighbor against neighbor. it's no longer so easy to identify what's been driven by the government of Sudan, what's been driven by the rebels, and what's been driven by a human reaction to survive and find resources. So for MSF, we prioritize getting out of these camps to try and get to these more difficult areas to provide assistance. It's extremely frustrating for us when we hear that 20,000 people outside of Mujahriya in South Darfur have been displaced or there's ongoing violence, but there's nothing we can do because we can't get sufficient security negotiation through to get into that area because we can't find credible negotiating partners. So displacement goes on and on, violence goes on and on, villages continue to be destroyed. And so, indeed, it's then a knee-jerk reaction from many to say, right, if it's so insecure, let's get a military force in there. And as MSF, we don't take a position on this because we don't know what the answer is. If you look at military interventions in Somalia recently, if you look at military interventions in Iraq, I think we have examples at least to see that, excuse me, it's too easy in some ways to simply call for a military intervention. There's enough examples of military interventions where it's gone wrong. There's examples where it's gone right as well. It's also paradoxical to speak about there is no military solution but demand a UN presence on the ground. So for us as an organization, we try to stay outside of these very difficult solution-finding processes and focus entirely on trying to reach people in need and provide essential life-saving assistance. Admittedly, that's extremely difficult right now in Darfur.